Welcome to the Center for Global Initiatives podcast, a production of the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing Center for Global Initiatives. Tune in monthly to hear from Johns Hopkins students and faculty about their travels, projects, experiences with, and thoughts on global health nursing. Welcome to the fifth episode of the Center for Global Initiatives podcast. Today we're talking to Dean Davidson. Dr. Davidson is the dean here at the School of Nursing, so we really appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule to come and be on the podcast. Dean Davidson's work is surrounding chronic conditions and cardiovascular health in underserved and vulnerable populations. She is the Counsel General for the International Council on Women's Health Issues, as well as a member of the Sigma Theta Tau International's Institute for Global Healthcare Leadership Advisory Board. And these are just the tip of the iceberg. There are a myriad of other accolades and responsibilities that I'm not going to go through because we'd never get to the podcast. Recently, though, you've begun work with the UNFPA Syrian Border Cross Operation to strengthen health systems and create increased capacity development for midwifery care in Syria, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Great.
All right. So just, I think, to kick it off a little bit, to start with a basic understanding of what's going on in Syria.
Okay. Could
you maybe give the listeners just a brief rundown of that? Not that it's a brief situation, but...
No. So I'm very personally engaged with Syria for a number of reasons. Firstly, my grandmother was Syrian, and my grandfather Lebanese. And so I understand some of those struggles that have gone on for centuries. And in fact, that was the reason that my family left the Lebanon many years ago. So I'm very personally involved with this. And also I reflect back, it was at 2011 and my nephew was being married and the family couldn't come from Syria. And at that time we were hoping, everyone's thinking it's not going to be this bad. But the conflict has persisted since 2011. Mm-hmm. And during that time, 11 million people have been displaced. Mm-hmm. Probably 5 million people have gone to Turkey and other countries. And over 6 million people are displaced within Turkey. And some of the positive and negative attributes of contemporary media is that we are all part of this suffering vicariously, but can do very little to support it or make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I think that's particularly poignant for nurses and who really want to make a difference in the world. But knowing what to do in that situation is really very, very challenging. And so I don't propose to have any real expertise in mm-hmm. the Syrian crisis, except like many people in the School of Nursing community, we really care about this and are really struggling as to what we can do to make a difference. So one of the great things about Johns Hopkins is the global network mm-hmm. and the capacity to do good through the brand. So it was actually one of our alumni, Pandora Hartman, who is working with the UN, with UNPH, and just reached out and said, you know, we've got midwifery is such a big, you know, challenge. And, you know, the mission of UNFPA is, you know, no child is born unwanted. Every child is born healthy and safe. And most importantly, every child has a capacity to survive and thrive. So she reached out to me to say, you know, can you help us? What can you do? And as you know, in the School of Nursing community, I sent out a email and we got so many responses back. But our real limitation was that very few of us spoke Arabic. And what has been really successful, and it's one of the great things about the Hopkins web, is that I was able to connect her with the American University of Beirut, which the School of Nursing has a collaborative arrangement. And of course, to say to the dean there, do you have any Arabic-speaking nurses, midwives who are interested. And so that has really started to sort of develop that capacity. But it doesn't mean that we don't still can't do a lot within the School of Nursing.
Right. What does Dr. Hartman's work look like? Is she working in refugee camps outside of Syria? Is she in Syria?
Well, I think she's really more trying to, from a strategic perspective, negotiate plans for capacity development. But as you know, in the international sphere, particularly in such a contested space, aligning partners and moving that forward is challenging. But she's an exceptional midwife who's done a lot of work in the field.
Is the UN able to get into Syria? Are they allowed to like set up camps and that sort of thing?
Well, there are some, but you know, I think there is still so much conflict at the moment. It's just really looking at this, you know, the safety of health workers. And what has happened in that situation is that in generations gone by, the Red Cross on a vehicle was a symbol of safety and no-go. We know that health workers specifically are now targets in Syria.
Right. There were a lot of bombings and things specifically targeted at hospitals.
Yes.
If I'm correct.
So that's tragic because now healthcare workers are like a weapon of war, and the very little that people have is being decimated. And, you know, my exposure is much the same just through the media, where you see these very isolated health workers who are holding on tenaciously just to make a difference to healthcare.
So on our end, what we would be participating in with this project, we are working to set up capacity building.
So what, at the moment, we're just looking at probably providing technical support. As you know, we have the Global Alliance for Nursing and Midwifery, which we can sort of send information out, and can we do it in Arabic? That's an important part. But also, I think what we can do, as was demonstrated by you wonderful students before the holidays, is just the sign of solidarity. And you would have seen, you know, on the Sun Vitals, you know, we got a letter back from MSF saying, this is great work. These people really appreciated the personalised notes from other healthcare workers. And also, importantly, the financial contribution, because at the moment, probably that is one of the most meaningful things we can do, is as well as providing our technical support and just collegial support, trying to rally for financial support. And of course, trying to have a political voice in the sphere, particularly in terms of advocacy for refugees.
So you said that the response was pretty big that
you
got back from the students and faculty?
Yes, and you know, we had, you know, on social media a kind of thank you clip, and we raised $1,000, which for poor starving students is a lot of money. And more importantly, the students wrote letters to the healthcare workers in Syria, which we sent to MSF, who sent them into the field. So it's we don't know whether that works, but you know, we read messages of people just recognizing that solidarity, and it's probably hard to believe what it is like on a day-to-day basis there in terms of the suffering and the exhaustion of the work, because we all know as nurses what it's like to do a full shift.
Right. I just found out last week, so I'm exhausted.
It was eye-opening, really. So for people who are kind of on square one with the conflict in Syria, who might want a little bit more information, who want to help but kind of feel a little lost or overwhelmed with all the information out there, can you provide like a resource or maybe an idea for where to go for more information?
Well, I think the United Nations websites are really important, and all the different sort of agencies from the Refugee Council to UNFPA, Doctors Without Borders, I think they provide sort of a fearless and courageous voice for healthcare. And also UNICEF, who are really particularly taking care of children, and that is one of the big displaced populations, and many of them who are orphaned. But I think we can't underestimate the power of our political voice. And we've just seen with the executive order from the president, the implications of that strategy and what it can have on other populations. So I think we have to collegially operate in a bipartisan framework to make people recognize that this is a human rights issue, it's a social justice issue, it's not an issue of being a Republican or a Democrat, it's an issue of being a good citizen on this planet. So we know that we are working and living in a very politicized and fractured and sometimes contested environment, but we cannot be passive. We have to have the voice, but we have to have a voice in a respectful way that is going to make a difference.
For students that would like to be involved or are unable to physically go to Syria, we talked a little bit about some of the options. You can contribute financially or get politically involved. Are there any other ideas that you have about how we can help and how we can involve ourselves with the relief effort?
Well, I think it's about volunteering with many of the NGOs working in the sector to see what you can actually do from being based in the United States. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of technical support in terms of policies, procedures, and writing documents, sending materials. They're all tangible efforts that we can really achieve. But engaging in the political process, hoping for some sort of peace building, is really what is very important. And it's about keeping those people on the agenda. And we can see that often just in the popular discourse, there can be some sort of news event that takes these people off the front page. And so on social media, you know, please be on your Facebook pages, please be putting out these stories, keeping these people visible front and center. And also that even though many of us can't provide direct services in the field, unless you're part of a NGO such as MSF, we also need to look at providing support to many healthcare professionals who in areas right throughout Europe are looking at, particularly Europe, across the world, but particularly Europe, who are looking at these big refugee populations. And so nursing as a discipline from our humanistic platform and focus has a lot to offer. Lots of the literature in terms of cultural competency is from the nursing literature. So how do we communicate the importance of that information? And also, just even here in Baltimore, we have the International Refugee Center just in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. How do we reach out to them? And some things that I've done across my career, which again seem small and trivial, but just welcome packages for refugees, collecting all those millions of little bottles of shampoo, creating small little gift packets, volunteering there, working, reading to children, how do we make people feel welcome and engaged in the United States? How do we help these children who have probably not been to school for many years? How do we catch them up? So I think there's many things in many small ways that we can do, but it's about reaching out to the NGOs who are working in the field.
Can I ask a little bit of a more specific question that is more like based on the program? What does capacity building look like?
So I think capacity building is about building knowledge, skills, and capabilities. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you have a workforce that is just totally blown apart, how do you look about developing skills in a whole range of healthcare workers? How do you promote knowledge, say, for safe birthing procedures in mm-hmm. people that are working in the refugee camps? And also, how are you building capacity for respectful societies within those refugee camps. I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
How do you affirm the role and position of women?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you protect women in the and children in those situations? Because it's often them that are, who are most vulnerable. So capacity development is also about health system strengthening. And we know that health system strengthening is dependent on a range of factors, but particularly workforce development. And we know that nurses are 80% of the global mm-hmm. healthcare workforce. So anything we can do to develop the strength and capacity of nurses and midwives, helping them to practice at the top of their license. And also, you can imagine the whole strata of health professions that have just been, you know, removed in Syria. You know, that was a very sort of civilized society with very well educated people, and now it's a, just a very fragmented country, which, and the trauma from that is going to be generational. You see that in, say, in Lebanon, people who grew up in the various wars are still traumatized by those experiences.
So it sounds almost like, I mean, when you think about the conflict in Syria and how to help, it feels like such kind of like a triage situation. So how do you incorporate the element of sustainability and, you know, looking more at a long-term picture?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. There's the immediate here and now and just really saving people's lives. But it's also, you know, planning for the future, planning for hopefully when this conflict will end, thinking about how you're going to restore and sustain that society that has been so traumatized by conflict. So I think thinking about a range of strategies, and I know the International Council on Nursing is looking to see how we can support nursing organizations within Syria, how we can support some of our sister schools that are close by, particularly in Jordan and in Lebanon, that can provide capacity. So I think this is a moment when we recognize that being at Johns Hopkins is a place of privilege, mm-hmm. and with privilege comes responsibility. And so we need to look at any opportunities we can to be able to respond to this crisis. But I think even when you talk to people who are true experts in the field, like Dr. Paul Spiegel from, you know, the Center for Refugee Health in Bloomberg mm-hmm. School of Public Health, it's kind of a bit of watchful waiting at the moment, because in spite of best intentions, it's very difficult. You know, you can't go into the country. But I think what we want to remember is not to make the same mistakes from previous conflicts where when the guns stop firing, the issues get forgotten.
Right.
So I think it's often very easy to be in the moment, and there's a lot of attention on conflicts. But then you look at, say, for example, some of the phenomenal work that Nancy Glass is doing.
That's what I was just thinking of.
Yeah. In post-conflict settings. So, you know, she's in South Sudan mm-hmm. this week, and then her whole program of research is really trying to build capacity, build infrastructure, build resources, build social and human capital in response to the devastation in the Congo, in the DRC.
Do you think that we as nurses and Hopkins-educated nurses have a responsibility and have a duty to aid in humanitarian efforts?
Absolutely. You know, I think we are all global citizens, that we are in a very privileged space. We are in this amazing institution with great intellectual capital as well as great resources. And I think they're the sort of people that Johns Hopkins attracts. Mm. Because you don't come to East Baltimore for the leafy gardens and the polo fields. You come to East Baltimore because you want to make a difference in the world. And really at Hopkins, I really think it encapsulates the local to global. Because many of the issues that we see in people in Baltimore are as a consequence of generations of trauma. Mm-hmm. And so I think also the responsibility that Hopkins has is not just in terms of doing the direct clinical work, but advancing the science that's going to make a difference. And also using the Hopkins brand for good, you know, the brand will open doors. So, you know, I think as Hopkins grads, you want to use that. You want to, people will recognize it. You'll be able to negotiate a lot easier because you have the credibility of being a Hopkins nurse. So it's a big challenge and a big responsibility, but also remembering that there are 7,000 alumni and there are many people in the school who for decades will be interested in supporting your work.
It really lightened my heart and made me proud that you said that so many people responded to your email.
Oh yeah, with so many people. And also just in a way you don't realize about how encouraging it was for Pandora that I sent her this Excel spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to think for the people that are working in that space, it just must become very frustrating. But also I think there's can be a lot achieved just through solidarity. And for people like you, the sequelae of the Syrian conflict will be here for generations. And this is not something that is going to go easily. And so we have to think about, just in our world, how we build tolerance, how we have a brave voice for diversity, and how we meaningfully and successfully engage in the political process to make a difference. But we have entered a time where courageous leadership is very important, but courageous leadership does not mean doing something where you're going to sort of lose your value proposition or lose your credibility. So I really think we have to keep talking about human rights, social justice, and tolerance and respect and diversity. And that doesn't matter where you're born or what the color of your skin is or who you love. It's about being a human citizen. And so I think we can do a lot to model that, just even at the school and in our families and our relationships. You know, how do we build tolerance? How do we make people from a range of different networks feel comfortable and included? And also we have a lot of important things to think about now for people who are just really hurting for the fact that because you're labeled Muslim, Syrian, or from another one of these designated countries, that for some reason you are not as worthy or worthy of respect, engagement, or participation in society. Because really what we're talking about is everybody's individual right to participate in society. And visas and a whole other range of stipulations are clear messages about the lack of inclusion, which can be very challenging. There's much to be done for global work by just really trying to create that ethos that health is a human right, that everyone should have access to healthcare, and that respect is an important strategy for creating a prosperous and inclusive society. Now, no one can say that fostering conflict does anything for anyone, for the economy, for people, for the world. So how do we channel our voices collectively to make sure that we promote tolerance and respect?
I think that We've all really internalized those messages here at the School of Nursing. I think we've had a lot of classes on ethics, and we've talked ad nauseum about all of a lot of cultural considerations and ethical considerations in nursing. And I do think it really sets apart the Hopkins grad when I've encountered them on floors during clinicals and things like that. And it's nice to know that there's a community behind you should you choose to pursue these avenues that has your back.
Yeah. It's interesting just in terms of how the solidarity can make a difference. So you're aware, did you get to see Casey Hitchcock when she came?
No, I didn't, unfortunately.
So you know, when she was quarantined or incarcerated, whatever the term is, you know, I wrote to her, I think many people did, and, you know, I didn't hear back. And I think then I met her when we invited her back for alumni weekend. And firstly, you know, in the flesh, she's even more impressive than she was on the TV. But she said how meaningful that was at that time, just to know that people kind of cared or shared her values, because sometimes it can be easy to be alone and isolated. So I think messages of solidarity, symbols of solidarity are really important. And also the courage to stand up. And, you know, I'm so proud that she's a Hopkins nurse, because not only did she have the moral courage, she had the intellectual capacity and evidence and education to be able to have a cogent argument as to why she should not be quarantined. So, you know, Hopkins nurses are pretty amazing and going to make a difference in the world.
I'm feeling very inspired right now, like ready to get out there and get to work.
Are you still looking for volunteers for this project?
You know,
and how would they get in contact?
Well, I think if they just email me, you know, Pandora hasn't asked since the new year for anything since I connected her with Lebanon. But, you know, I think anybody can, you know, connect.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe we do another event like we did before the holidays, which was around fundraising and awareness. And as you know, I really think social media makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Now, I have always thought that, but, you know, social media is a conversation happening with or without you. And if you want to do something meaningful, everyone should have a Twitter handle and just be retweeting all these things about Syria, hashtag Syria. And, you know, that's how people take notice. And, of course, engaging in the political process is a really important thing.
Just to wrap things up, do you mind talking a little bit about, like, what it means to be a citizen of the world and to be globally minded?
Well, I really think to do global health, you really need to have the spirit of being a global citizen. That is that you have to think beyond borders, you have to think beyond color of skin, and think beyond people's beliefs. You have to be accepting and you need to be engaged. And you can do global health from anywhere in the world. And being global health is not always just about being in the field. It's about doing work to promote health equity, social justice, and human rights. And even though recent policy changes have maybe challenged the notion of globalization, and we know that globalization is a two-edged sword, but in 2017, we cannot deny that we are each inextricably linked and interconnected. And the welfare of each and every one of us on this planet is dependent upon how we care for and respect other people. And all I can say is nursing is such an amazing profession to work in global health, because it does have those humanistic perspectives. It's not about one organ. It's not about one approach. It's about the whole person. And so nurses are very well poised to do great work in global health. And thank you for the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Coming.
Thank you for listening, and tune in on the first Thursday of every month for a new episode. You can find more information about the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing Center for Global Initiatives at nursing.jhu.edu/CGI.